Welcome to The Kitchen Table, a show dedicated to helping you escape diet culture, gain trust with food, honor your body, and live a brighter life. Hello and welcome back to The Kitchen Table. I am so glad you're here. I'm your host, Alicia Brown, an anti-diet registered dietitian nutritionist. And here with me today, I have Casey Berglund. She's the owner of Worthy and Well. She is my guide. She is my coach. Right before we hopped on the show together, we actually went through an embodiment practice and I guided it this time. And I felt so honored to do so because she had shown me how really to get into my body. She leads this movement called the Let Your Body Lead movement, where she truly believes that our bodies have sensations that can guide us not only in determining what to eat or how to like get into our bodies and honor our bodies, but also like help us with like big decisions in life. They can really let us lead in bigger ways beyond food and body. It's the Let Your Body Lead revolution, where we come back to our inner bodies and our inner knowing. And Casey is so wise, and I am so excited for her to just share a little bit of what the Let Your Body Lead movement is all about. And she's actually a registered dietitian herself, and so maybe she'll share a little bit about her journey coming to intuitive eating and now blossoming into the Let Your Body Lead movement. So thank you, Casey, for being here with me today.
I'm so excited to be here. And to your point about leading the embodiment practice, it was like, oh, it just feels so good to receive. And what a gift to witness your like skill and heart and guidance and just be able to surrender into that. And, you know, both of us had said right before we hit record how it's like, whew, I feel totally different. And it's like a game changer in terms of presence and being able to, I think, speak more authentically and be more connected. So I'm excited for, you know, the listeners today to hopefully receive value from this conversation. So thank you for kicking us off in that way.
It is amazing how just a few deep breaths together in our space can have a sense of groundedness and connectedness at the same time. That is magic. There's some magic in that rather than just like flying in, sitting down, getting our podcast stuff set up and just ready to go. We're coming from a different energy. I so agree with that and appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And so as we get started today, would you like to first share a little bit about your hero story, how you came to where you are today? I know it's a loaded question.
Yeah, thank you for asking. So often on podcast interviews at the start where it's like, what's your origin story? I'm often like, long story or the short story, because sometimes I can be a bit of a long-winded storyteller. But I think what's true for a lot of people who find their way to work that involves embodiment is beginning in disembodiment. So that was certainly true for me. I experienced disordered eating when I was quite young. I grew up on a farm outside of a really small community. And in a really stressful summer with a lot going on, you know, I was having struggles at school, socially, like being bullied and experiencing a lot of stress in my family. And on the farm, there's always like a lot of work to do, a lot of people around. And I think when any part of that system is off a bit, it can feel a bit chaotic. So this particular summer was really chaotic for me. And as a, I don't know, 11 or 12 year old girl, I was just trying to navigate my way through it all. And I often think, and Alicia, maybe you can resonate with this piece of like, if I only knew then what I know now, I really could have supported my younger self or made different decisions. Mm-hmm. And this is part of the journey. Like any sort of, you call it hero's journey, or that's like Joseph Campbell's hero's journey. I love that guy. Yeah. I think we all kind of start in this place of not having something we need and then learning transformation from that starting point. So for me, navigating stress at this time, and you know, my mom was sick and in this typical sort of farm family, well, slightly typical, like she definitely did the cooking and the cleaning and the feeding of people in our family and like I said, hired hands, but she also worked full time as a speech pathologist. So my mom was like very busy and had a very critical role in our family. Mm-hmm. But then got sick and could only really find comfort lying on the floor. So as a young, empathic, sensitive, intuitive kid, I can say that now with the awareness I now have, I just felt a lot of that. I felt a lot of that pain, that chaos that came from the people around me, but also in my own inner experience navigating bullying in school. And in that summer where it felt like everything was overwhelming and too much, two things happened in my relationship with food and my body. One, I learned that I loved working with food, and there was some sense of control and comfort when I was gardening, digging up potatoes, digging up carrots, or cooking. And basically at the age of 11 or 12, I took over the cooking for my family of six and the hired hands that were there. And I mean, it is what it is. And of course, I'm kind of like, whoo, that was a big role for a kid. And yet I stepped into it so seamlessly because I'd been watching my mother cook and helping her. And, you know, every year I'd plant the garden and we'd do that together. But this year with her being sick, I really took it on, and I learned that I loved cooking, and it was in some ways wonderful because my mom kind of hated cooking and would not clean. So I would cook and make a huge mess and she would clean. And I think of that as sort of the beautiful part of that part of my journey, was finding this love of cooking and love of food.
Yeah.
Other hand, that's where the disordered relationship with it and with my body began, because I think as is true for many people with disordered eating, sometimes there can be this wanting to control food as a way to control self and honestly others. Like, there's some manipulation in that. It is a mental illness. There's struggle inside that I think leads to that behavior. So for me, I was cooking for my family, but then, you know, manipulating my own intake in a way that wasn't supportive to my body. And in that summer, my body changed. And in many ways, the eating disorder in me was enjoying that change. I was seeing it get smaller and smaller and obsessing. I started that obsession with my body and this feeling like, oh, in if I can just, you know, change my food intake this way or that way. And I'm mindful in this moment of sort of how much to share about that sort of disorder journey, because it can be very triggering for listeners, especially if they're experiencing some of the same struggles. So maybe I'll just, that's enough. That's enough to say. And I suppose in that space, I was very disembodied. Like, I think experiencing an eating disorder or struggling with food at all, or just being a chronic dieter or wanting to change your body, the essence of that is like, if I want my body to change or need my body to change, my head is going to control it. We're not working with our bodies if we're working so hard to change them. And so in my illness at the time, I wasn't working with my body. I was very disembodied, and that was like the way that I needed to cope at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where my journey starts. And it's so interesting to me how that started to shift and change over time. You know, for me, living on a farm in a rural community with, you know, maybe less access to healthcare, I wasn't supported through the medical system with my eating disorder. I literally had to rely on my own inner wisdom to help me heal, which often doesn't work when you're in a really disordered state of mind. But the thing that started to change things for me, and the first experience I had where I realized, like, wow, my body has wisdom for me, was when I went back to school and was in a track and field meet. And so a lot of my identity growing up was built around being an athlete, being really good at sports. I loved like volleyball, figure skating, track and field, baseball. I played like all the sports, kind of what you do in small towns. And I was in this track and field meet, and my events were the 100 meter long jump, triple jump, high jump. And almost every year prior, I'd won all of those events. I got first place. And this year I was doing these races, engaging in my events, and I lost to the girl that always came second to me. And of course there was, you know, like ego in that, but it was exactly what I needed at that age in that moment to realize for the first time, wow, how I'm manipulating food and the purpose of food isn't just about manipulating my weight. It literally is helping me function and live and be strong and do things. And it's fascinating to me how common it is for us to not think about food as fuel, but rather something that's going to increase or decrease our weight.
Mm.
Like, how disordered is that culturally, right?
Yes.
So it was this first moment of my choices, my behaviors around food have literally made my body weak, and it's impacting something I really care about.
Mm.
So I remember that day so clearly and that night so clearly. I was lying in bed that night, feeling the hunger in my stomach, the hunger that I had taught myself to ignore, and noticing this voice inside my head, which I would now refer to as the voice of the eating disorder, saying, ignore it, go to sleep. And then it was almost like there was this inner dialogue, this other voice that came from a different part of my body that was like, eat. And there was this battle, like, ignore it, go to sleep, eat, ignore it, go to sleep, eat. And I made a different choice that night. I got out of bed, went to the kitchen, grabbed a couple slices of my dad's favorite rye bread and Kraft smooth peanut butter, and I made a peanut butter sandwich. And literally it's like midnight and everybody's in bed. And I sat at the kitchen table alone and ate that peanut butter sandwich. And to me, it brings me to tears because I'm like, holy shit, body, you just saved my life. You know, that was a turning point in my disordered eating. And of course there was a lot of ups and downs in that healing journey. You know, I definitely started to nourish myself more and my body changed again in a way that was healthier for it. But I struggled with those thoughts of like, is this okay? Or like comparison or like constantly judging other people's bodies and eating behaviors. You know, it's like the disordered thoughts don't stop when the behaviors stop. It can be a struggle over time. And it was for me. And so that upbringing, that experience of learning that I love food and cooking and that like food is a tool to use in a disordered way and that that wasn't ultimately serving deeper parts of me really began my journey toward embodiment and toward the Let Your Body Lead movement and everything that I'm about now. So I feel like that's sort of maybe the most important part is like the starting point. Ultimately, I went on to do my degree in nutrition, as you did, and become a registered dietitian. And what I learned in that time, obviously, I was fascinated by the science and how food works in our system and all of that. But also, I kind of just learned a new set of academic science-based rules to follow to stay out of my body. It still wasn't an embodied practice. I didn't learn how to drop in, that it was even safe to trust my hunger and fullness. I learned more so that we should have this many carbs and protein and fat at every meal, and it's like a new set of rules. So during my last year of university, or maybe my second last year, I reluctantly went to my first yoga class with a new friend that I was developing a relationship with. And you know, when you're like, ooh, this person's so cool, I want to hang out with them. And like, they like yoga. Like, I don't think I'm going to like yoga, but I like you and I want to build a relationship with you. So I went to this class and I hated it. I hated it. It was not like a love at first sight sort of moment, but this experience of like having to be so quiet and not moving vigorously in the way that I trained myself to, quote, enjoy. You know, I'm like, did I really enjoy that? I don't know. Was that just diet culture moving through me? You know, anyway, it was just this uncomfortable experience of being with myself and being with my thoughts and being with my inner experience in a deeper way. And so, yeah, I was resistant. And I guess because of that friendship, I reluctantly went a few more times. And there was this one time where I went to a specific studio that the teacher was just like soulful and kind of, she guided a vigorous practice so my thoughts could like not be so quick and fast and chaotic. But she also dropped in these bits of Eastern philosophy and wisdom. She said these words that like, it was like they floated off her tongue like poetry and resonated with me in a way that I'm like, whoa, where's this coming from? Like, it just, I felt that truth.
Yeah.
And that Shavasana, the posture at the end of every yoga class, for the first time, I would say probably in my life, I felt this sense of like profound peace and sort of like everything's going to be okay. And that was the one class that hooked me into practicing more. And what I found as I practiced more was that I started to like, just because of time, like work out a little bit less. And I started to just feel more expansive and joyful in my life. And I started to notice that my body was talking to me, and it started to impact the way that I related with food, engaging in more sort of mindful practices or intuitive practices around food. And paralleling that, I found the book Intuitive Eating, which has guided a lot of work for dietitians by Evelyn Triboli and Elise Resch. I don't know how to say her name properly. And it just felt so true. Like, this is the missing piece. So I finished my degree in nutrition. I went on to do a yoga teacher training. I started working in the field, you know, in the hospital system, teaching yoga classes wherever I could, and realizing when I was working in our like medical system, there's something missing here. Like, if I could integrate more of what I learned from yoga and the philosophy and mindfulness, maybe that would support people in feeling more empowered about their health, rather than me just telling them that they should choose different foods. And then in yoga, I started to notice the ways in which, well, what I would now define as diet culture snuck into that field, you know, the like 30-day juice cleanse, or it was like this messaging around an all or none relationship with food and body. I started to see everywhere. And when I eventually launched Worthy and Well in 2015 and had fully embraced private practice, Worthy and Well began as a company to support people with healing their relationship with their body and food through using the combination of Eastern philosophy and mindful meditation practice, yoga philosophy with science, specifically with an intuitive eating approach and using like a mindfulness-based approach. With clients, I felt like a bit rebellious. I was scared at first that I'd get my dietitian license taken away by meditating with my clients or by bringing these sort of other philosophies into our work. But I kind of did it anyway in secret and didn't tell people about it. And what I found, like, how funny that I was scared of meditating with clients. Like, I think about how much we're as dietitians conditioned to like do everything right and within the box and like, oh, don't mess it up, right? Talk about that sort of like perfectionistic, fear-based way of working.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that same inner voice that told me to eat that night of the track and field race told me to, like, just guide people into their bodies, get them to know themselves. They know when they're hungry and when they're full. And like integrating intuitive eating principles with embodiment practice, I started to realize, like, the more and more people connected with their bodies, not only were they becoming more empowered around their eating decisions and starting to slowly stop outsourcing their power to diets, but they were also starting to become more empowered in their lives. One particular client I recall who came to me because she had celiac disease, but she struggled with a lot of digestive symptoms, like IBS-like symptoms, and was like, I need to, you know, cut out sugar and dairy and, you know, all the things. And when we started to go into the body, I started to guide her into her body. Eventually, she came to this place, attuning to the sensations in her intestines, this kind of solar plexus area, the area of the belly. And with gentle curiosity and questioning from that embodied space, she said, like, this isn't about food at all. These symptoms are not related to food. I'm in the wrong relationship. And she kind of had these knowings about what she needed in her life that weren't actually about food at all. And to me, it was this awakening to, like, the power of embodiment. I'm not just helping people heal their relationship with their bodies and food, but I'm helping them to reclaim their power, reclaim their, heal some of the conditioning that they've experienced, heal the oppression. A lot of my clients were women at the time, and a lot came up about, like, not having a voice in a society where we're taught to not have as much of a voice. There's social conditioning about not playing big and being people pleasers and all of this stuff. So, like I said, long-winded storyteller, I'm going to, like, speed it up a little. But after that point, I drove across the country and taught these yoga for mindful eating workshops and kept feeling like this work is so much more powerful. And for me, I just started to feel like in some ways my job was done, like my personal purpose in the realm of food was coming to a close, and that I was feeling called into guiding people in broader, deeper, more meaningful, not that the food's like that is the perfect gateway in, but in other ways. Mm-hmm. And I kind of felt like the conversation of food became a bit of a Trojan horse. Like, people still would come to me asking for, you know, meal plans or weight loss or whatever. And I started to feel like I'm feeling called to not use so much of my energy guiding away from that, but rather drop the Trojan horse of food and open up this realm of embodiment to people who aren't just struggling with food, but other things. And so that's what led to eventually a rebranding of my company, you know, doing coach training, going to India, you know, sitting in an ashram in India and meditating, and that same body wisdom saying to me, let go of your dietitian identity. There's more for you right now. And moving through that and evolving beyond that. And so ultimately that's led to this version of Worthy and Well, which has led to the Let Your Body Lead TED Talk. And through that journey of creating it, I realized this embodiment piece has always been the thread, and there's so much more that we can build off of this. And, you know, having other dietitians, healthcare providers, coaches, consultants come to me with curiosity and with this, like, what? Tell me more.
Yeah.
And realizing, like, there's more that I can offer to other people like you, Alicia, like other dietitians.
Yes.
To guide their clients in deeper and more meaningful ways through transformational journeys. So now Worthy and Well's mission really is to support people with working with the wisdom of their bodies to create powerful, purpose-driven lives and businesses. I believe body wisdom can guide how we eat, how we move, how we sleep, what we choose for ourselves, but it can also guide who we decide to marry, what business shifts we need to make, how we can live in alignment with our own deepest truth in a culture that wants to homogenize us.
Mm.
And I feel like there's never been a better time than right now during this pandemic, where there's so many conflicting views and you don't know what to believe. It's like, it could be so easy to give your power away to an idea that comes from someone else. But there's never been a better time to drop the guru complex, realize that we're all equals, that we all have our own unique wisdom, that we all play a really important role in the puzzle piece of life, and to really claim that power and own that power and show up in the world from that grounded, authentic, wholehearted place. I'm going to pause.
Oh, I just felt that all like in my bones. Like if I just attuned to my body for just a hot minute, Casey, the times where you, just reflecting on your own journey, to reflect back to you and to everyone listening, it's so clear in your history, the times where you followed your intuition, and I know oftentimes we talk about intuitive, you know, intuitive eating, but intuitive is really like the knowing that is our intuition. And the times where you leaned into your inner knowing, where you caught glimpses of it in cooking, but then in eating that peanut butter sandwich, and then finding it again and again, it was like you hit your intuition and then other things happened, and then you hit it again in that yoga class and then other things happened. There were times where you were just like consistently brought back to your intuition, where then that was where, when you were knowing of that and you knew how to grow from that place, an anchor in that intuition, you developed more body trust, it seems.
Yes.
And
so
that just
true.
Evolved and grew. Does that feel true? Yes.
It feels so true. This, the word trust, like, gosh, why is it so hard to trust ourselves? Mm. It's still so hard for me. I'm still literally always in this upward spiral of letting go of trust, giving away my power, and then coming back. And luckily, like you said, I have had many of these experiences where literally my body's wisdom, or in other words, like the intuition that has come through listening to myself, it's literally saved my life. It's saved my business. It's saved me. It's helped me belong to me, regardless of what's going on outside of me. And I think those moments of experience, like I often say, evidence builds confidence, like trust is earned over time. Mm-hmm. So trust is a dynamic that we build within ourselves. And it's harder. It's hard to trust yourself at the beginning when you're really disembodied. But then you get that one hit, like the peanut butter sandwich, like you said. And it's like, okay, I can trust this. Or the moment, like, gosh, I have a moment of being 8 years old on the playground and like crying because of the bullying, and then the crying stopping, and that same voice being like, all kids deserve to feel worthy. All people deserve to feel worthy. What is my business called? Worthy and Well. Like that inner voice as an 8-year-old kid literally defined the name of my business. Mm-hmm. So it's like that part has always been with me, and I forget almost every day. I forget. And then I come back to it, and the trust builds from receiving evidence every time I come back that that is the right choice. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not the choice that I'm being told to make from outside influences.
Absolutely. And so often with intuitive eating, you know, and with people really struggling with, especially like the food and the body's piece, you're right. Like we're coming from a very disembodied place because we're taught to, you know, we're taught follow this diet, outsource your power. I love how you say that, outsourcing our power to diets and meal plans and other things that say that they know how to better help us eat. They know how to better tell us, you know, what, when, and how much. And sometimes we just find ourselves like grasping for more information. And then we're grasping even in other ways at work. We're like, okay, well, what can we do better here? And then in our relationships, okay, what do I need more of here? And we find ourselves not only outsourcing our power just with food, but we can find ourselves, the more we outsource, the more disembodied we become. It's kind of like you were saying, that funnel. And so food, for so many, would you agree, can be like a gateway to be like the first thing to help us maybe build that trust again, so we can learn what that voice is, so we can hear that voice again, so we can start to reclaim that power a little bit more.
Absolutely. Looking at your relationship with food is such a beautiful gateway to start to begin the body trust journey. I mean, we all eat, or we wouldn't be alive.
That's true.
We all eat. And hopefully, if we have like a healthy, nourishing relationship with food, I mean, people's intuitive eating journey can will look different, right? Yeah. But hopefully we eat at least a couple times a day, you know? So already there's an opportunity every single day, probably 2 or 3 or 4 or 6 or 10 times a day, depending on your intuitive eating journey, mm-hmm. to give yourself an opportunity to develop and to choose body trust rather than outsourcing your power. And of course, that journey is very imperfect. You probably outsource your power like in a 10 to 1 ratio when you're starting, right? And then it grows over time and it's like, oh yeah, I trusted myself. I wanted the chocolate ice cream instead of the mango sorbet and I chose the chocolate ice cream and I felt the satisfaction of that. Thanks, body. That was nourishing.
Love
Not just to my physical self, but to my whole being, my spiritual, mental, emotional, physical self, my relational self. Mm-hmm. It's like food is showing us so much about who we are in a holistic way. And yet the act of eating gets minimized to just a like, how is this going to impact my physical body type of experience, which mm-hmm. I think can be so stressful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. It can be really stressful and we can battle a lot of other voices other than our intuition and the mind trying to dictate our food choices. And it's like, how can we anchor into that embodiment piece? So a question that I have for you, Casey, is for someone who wants to like start being more embodied, starting wanting to reclaim a little bit of their power back, make their own food choices, decide for themselves what, when, and how much to eat. What is something you might suggest for them to kind of come from a place of more of an embodied place with eating, and what might that look like? You mentioned the mango and the chocolate sorbet, yes. And I love both. In my mind, right away, I was like, oh, either right now would be marvelous for breakfast this morning.
Both together on a waffle cone.
Yes.
Yeah. The mango chocolate combo might clash a little.
You know, it'd look pretty though. Anything mango looks pretty. Mm-hmm. But I guess what I'm asking is, you know, that's a piece of what intuitive eating might be missing, is the actual dropping into the body, the actual letting the body lead. The intuitive eating book has such wonderful principles to help
so
us understand. It's so amazing. And it's really provided much of the framework for my practice. It's really a guidepost for my practice. But I felt like it was missing this one thing. It was missing how to listen to the body. You know, that can get so ambiguous. Okay, when you're ready to eat, just listen to your body. And I felt that in my experience venturing into intuitive eating too, of like, okay, what does this look like? And mm-hmm. so how would you help someone, quote, listen to the body? How can they get into a more embodied place from your understanding and how you might relay that to them?
Yeah, I love that you mentioned how powerful the intuitive eating principles are and how revolutionary that work is and how much it has guided for many humans and for many dietitians who are also intuitive eating counselors or who just embrace an intuitive eating approach in their work. Like, I think it is beautiful work. And the way the principles are set up are intellectual. Like, even like, are you hungry or are you full? If we don't know how to attune to that in our bodies, then we're thinking about our hunger rather than feeling our hunger.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
We're like, ooh, well, I don't know. Am I, you know, and that's a great place to start. Like, we all, intellectualizing has its benefits for sure. But really, to what you're asking is like, how can I drop in to the feeling, into the actual embodiment of the practice? And the first thing that comes to mind as a starting point is using the start of the acronym that I created, which is so simple because it is body. And body, which, you know, definitely that was something that came out of doing my TED talk. Body stands for breathe, observe, delay, say yes. And even if you started with the B and that's it, and you took 3 breaths before you ate, and even if it feels hard to be like, what does it even mean to connect with my body? Mm-hmm. Just take 3 breaths and set the intention like, okay, like, I want to connect with my body. Help me connect with my body. take three breaths, feel those breaths. Notice, do you feel expansion on the inhale, contraction on the exhale? How do you attune to the breath? Do you notice the air cooler through the nostrils as you inhale and a bit warmer as you exhale? When you focus on your breath, can you attune to the sound of the inhale and the sound of the exhale? Everybody connects in a different way. When you start to go into your inner experience, which is a prerequisite for embodiment, is actually bringing awareness to your inner experience. The way that you connect is unique to you. Some people are more auditory, so they're going to hear almost the movements in their body that connects them with their body. Or, I mean, if you're sensory, you're going to feel that expansion or that contraction. And I think we all have access to all elements of that type of inner awareness. Mm-hmm. And we'll start at one of those entry points. Mm-hmm. So the B of the body acronym is breathe. And if you just took a couple of breaths or attuned to your breath before eating, already you're going to be more in the present moment. Presence is an important part of embodiment. And maybe I'll even layer into that, like, what I've learned through this work is that, like, compassion in the embodiment journey is super important. So as you breathe, it's like, can you accept this and be kind to yourself in what you discover as you breathe? I mean, that's another element, so I don't want to layer on too much. But we also know that there's this, like, brain gut connect, just like brain body connection. Like, our brains literally are connected to our nervous system, which has, sensoring elements.
In
our finger. I don't know why I couldn't think of the word neurons in that moment. I'm like, I'm gonna pretend that I'm making this like layman's terms, but I really literally couldn't think of the word neurons. We have this capacity to sense through our bodies, and that is part of the brain. Like, the brain body are one, the mind body connection, it is one. It's not separate. So when we breathe, we're literally stimulating this sort of rest and digest. So it's also helping us digest. It's helping us get present. It's helping us to attune. Mm-hmm. So that breathing part, I would say, is the place to start. Obviously, there's three other letters in that acronym that could also be helpful. But I'm not going to speak too much to those in this moment unless you think it would be valuable for this. But I think your question of, like, where do we start? That's a place to start.
You know, and for anybody who wants to learn more about the O, D, and Y, they should definitely watch her TED Talk, right? If you hop on YouTube, type in Casey, Let Your Body Lead, it'll pop up her TED Talk, which I can't recommend more. And so at this point, can you tell us more about the Let Your Body Lead revolution and how you kind of see us as a collective? Like, what could happen for us in our world, in our time, if we started to attune to our bodies more? And in this process, we have to rid some of the conditioning from diet culture, right? Like, what would happen if we just, like, zoomed out and looked at all of us from, like, this grander perspective and seen all of us attuning to our bodies more, ditching diet culture more, ditching the relentless pursuit of thinness, that strive for that thinness? What if we ditched that? And what if we just attuned to our bodies and embraced the wisdom that they had a little bit more? That, to me, is what the Let Your Body Lead revolution sounds like. But I'm curious if you have any more that you can share on that and how you think that might impact our world.
Alicia, how open are you to connecting with your body right now and literally coming into a space of embodying the Let Your Body Lead vision? And listeners, I'm curious about their openness. And it doesn't have to be long, but how open are you to that?
Yes. What do you mean exactly?
You're like, I'm nervous.
Yes, I'll do whatever you like. What would you like?
I mean, this is your podcast. You can say no.
Take the wheel. Okay.
So I could easily, intellectually, head to head, tell you what I see as the Let Your Body Lead revolution vision.
Yeah.
But how much more powerful would it be if I dropped into your body, if we together sort of co-created what that vision actually would feel like, and maybe embodying some of that vision, like, through me guiding you into it. And the invitation here, obviously, to the listeners, like, unless you're driving, don't stop, close your eyes and breathe if you're driving. But the invitation is just, like, having an experience more so, maybe, like, you joining us in imagining what this vision could look like, be like, feel like.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah, let's do that.
See what happens?
Let's try. Yes.
Okay. And so for everyone listening, if you can join us, please do. We won't be here for very long, like maybe 5 minutes maybe. And what you need to know when you drop into your body, if this is your very first time, is one, you can come out at any point. If something about that inner experience feels like too much, or it's like, this isn't here for me, this isn't supporting me, you just open your eyes, you come out, you give your body a little shake. The other thing to know is that we all have a monkey mind that throws us stories and resistance. And often when we're having that inner experience, like me in my first yoga class, I was like, I hate this. This sucks. So notice that. Can you tap into the part that might be like, this is dumb, I don't want to do it. And just like, breathe. Use that B of the body acronym.
Mm-hmm.
So come to a comfortable position. Alicia, I'm going to do this with you. Close your eyes. Mm-hmm. If it feels safe, if you're listening and you're like, I don't want to close my eyes, keep them open. And if your eyes are open, just maybe staring at a spot in front of you or finding a point of focus. And I invite you to take that deep breath in through the nose and out through the mouth. And for you, Alicia, and everyone listening, on your next exhale, if you can invite some grounding through your feet, grounding the feet into the floor, feeling the feet down on the floor, or whatever point along the base of your body is touching matter beneath you, imagine that grounding into the earth, being held by the earth. And you can use this visual of growing sort of trunks like trees down into the earth. So just noticing that. Notice that in your experience, you're always held. You're always held by the earth beneath you. There's an opportunity here as well, depending on what you connect to connect to the support around you, whether that is our support right now through this podcast, or if you connect spiritually, calling in that type of support too. And again, just connecting with your breath. So noticing your inhale and your exhale. And so Alicia's question about, you know, can you tell us more about the Let Your Body Lead vision? So even if this feels hard to access, like you can just like think about it, imagine it, envision it, even ask yourself, what would that be like? And specifically bring this sense in your body of if you no longer felt this tension with food and body stuff, like if there was no longer this perhaps constant thinking about food, worrying about your body or your weight, this anxiety, or in whatever way diet culture has a grip on you, just for one moment, I invite you to imagine that it's safe for you to let that go and that you're held in some other way. Whatever you're getting or receiving by being kind of hooked into the messaging of diet culture, because of course, it serves us in some ways. Whatever you're getting or receiving from that, imagine that you are able to receive or get those needs met in other ways that feel more supportive and aligned and freeing. So I invite you in this moment to imagine what it might feel like to feel free and grounded. So as you breathe, if you're able, bring about this sense in your body of feeling free and grounded. Even if it doesn't feel true for you right now, imagine what it might feel like to accept yourself exactly as you are. To see yourself, to feel loved from within yourself. And again, if that's a stretch, just like acceptance, just like this is how it is. So for me, I feel when I think about feeling acceptance or when I feel that in my body, I feel like a softening in my heart. Like, oh, I don't have to change all the time. I get to just be how I am. It feels like a weight lifted off my shoulders. My shoulders drop a bit. So notice what comes up for you in that. It might be something different. This feeling of acceptance, compassion, and maybe even love within yourself, feeling free of all of the conditioning and anxiety and tension. And then imagine and or feel into the idea that that acceptance of self, compassion, and love shows up in other ways, not just in how you relate with food and your body, but in how you engage in relationship. Like you get to feel grounded in yourself and who you are in relationship with other people, in relationship with the things that you care about in life. Just a sense of compassion and love. And maybe there's this sense of acceptance of self, compassion, and love as it relates to your work or how you earn money or your relationship with money. Maybe there's less anxiety and just a sense of freedom, connection to self. And then imagine how you might show up for other people in the world from this place of self-acceptance, compassion, and love. Imagine what it might feel like to be able to be in someone else's presence and even for them to have maybe a different opinion than you or a different life story or a different experience and still to be able to hold this sense of acceptance, compassion, and love. To almost through who you're being and what you're embodying, perhaps even inspire a sense of self-acceptance, compassion, and love in that other person. Maybe there's a relationship in your life right now that you feel a bit of tension in. Like, how would that be different? With more acceptance, compassion, and love, more self-confidence, freedom. And then how might the world change if we all are doing this work and we're all connected to our bodies, to this sort of felt sense of acceptance, compassion, and love, no matter what's going on, no matter if we're struggling or if we're feeling joyful and expansive, there's this acceptance, compassion, and love, this connection to the body, this bringing the body on board for the journey. Imagine what the world would be like with us all engaging in this practice in all of our dynamics. Imagine what would change in the world right now as we witness separation, discourse, disruption, opposing views. Imagine if every human was coming to these hard conversations, this pandemic, the anti-racism conversation, from this place of like being grounded in your own self, your own body, and this intention of acceptance, compassion, and love leading the way. For me, I feel a sense of like expansion, like a light shining from my heart and a sense of power and resilience and like a capacity to hold difference and to grow together. So imagine a world where we were all being ourselves, realizing that we're all literally unique with unique needs. And that through leaning into our uniqueness and our body's wisdom and our own intuition, we're playing our own unique role in the world and in the way that our world is to evolve forward. Less comparison, less, insecurity, triggering of one another, or at least the capacity to hold it all because we're all in our own zone. We're on our path. How could our world be different? I invite you to stay connected with your body and your breath for a couple more moments, just imagining this different world. And then when you feel called to come back, invite that journey to begin, maybe wiggling your fingers and toes, Alicia, I invite you to take a deep breath in through your nose, and everyone out through the mouth. Take two more breaths, inhale and exhale. And then allow your eyes to blink open when you're ready and just notice how that feels.
Thank you, Casey.
You're welcome.
The common theme of acceptance, compassion, and love is something maybe the listeners will take in for themselves today, because I know that I will. And I think it's interesting to let our imaginations go to see maybe how that could impact our experience in the world. Mm-hmm. If we invited more of that into our reality.
Yeah, that really is the why behind the Let Your Body Lead mission.
Mm-hmm.
When we learn how to hold ourselves in all of our human experiences, even the ones that suck, that we want to escape, the shadowy bits we don't want to look at, the ways we don't want to heal our trauma, even if we build our resilience to hold the discomfort of that sensation in our bodies, like when we do that, when we learn to hold ourselves, we also hold more joy, more bliss, more connection. And we react a little less when someone else is going through something hard. And when someone else has discomfort, we can hold more. We're more resilient in our inner experience. And when we accept and have compassion for and love for our own inner experience, our capacity to hold space for other people in that same way increases. And I think that will change the world, especially the world as we know it. It's already happening. Our world is changing. Can we put a little bit of intention into bringing more acceptance, compassion, and love and embodiment into the world that's already changing and be those light workers, those change makers, those, I say light workers, I mean like lighthouse, you know, people learn more from what we embody than what we say or what we teach. You know,
yeah.
It's like you feel it. You walk into a room and see someone or feel someone's energy. You can feel if that energy is going to make you contract or expand. So I feel like it starts within our own experience, but the impact of that is tremendous. And it's so amazing that we have now our first cohort of Let Your Body Lead professional certification grows, like you said, to help that light and guide that way for other people, because it's sometimes hard work.
It is. But you're right. The harder the work, the more deeper the transformation, the more love, the more acceptance, the more compassion we might be able to hold as well. So I so appreciate that. Casey, where can everyone find you? Where can they learn more about the Let Your Body Lead method? Where can they connect with you?
Ooh, I mean, definitely you can email me or our team at info@worthyandwell.com and or follow us on Instagram @worthyandwell. Send a direct message. Send me a voice note, excuse me, on there that you heard this interview. And like, we are all about engagement and connection. So definitely reach out. Instagram or email are probably the best place. Our website is worthyandwell.com. It needs a lot of updating at the moment, but that will be happening soon. So,
it's great.
Whatever you most resonate with in terms of those platforms.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your time and guiding us through that practice, Casey. I invite everyone listening today, if you loved this episode, screenshot and share this episode. Speaking of engagement, right on social media, this needs to get into the ears of more people and the eyes of more people. If you're watching this on YouTube right now, if you enjoy this episode, please share it. Don't forget to subscribe to the channel and rate this podcast if you get a chance today. And also, Casey, thank you just so much for being here and sharing your gifts and your light with us today. You are a lighthouse. You are a force. And you're right. This movement has the opportunity to change the world, but we first have to start changing maybe ourselves and our inner experience. We can be more loving and accepting and compassionate toward ourselves so we can have more a loving, accepting, and compassionate world. Thank you so much, Casey, for your time today.
You're so welcome, and thank you for all that you do.